The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hi, hey, hello, and welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast, the show that brings you the best of the best feminist content. I'm your host, Neba from Notes by Neba, and today we're going to be talking about the rise of sustainability, thrifting, and all of the fashion industry with Emma Wasserman. Welcome to the show, Emma.
Thank you so much. So, hi, guys. I'm Emma. I'm 15 and from Westchester, New York, so like the suburbs of New York City. I do a lot of things outside of school, from piano to writing to like entrepreneurial shit and dance and like a bunch of other stuff. But being a Gen Zer, I also just have general high school stuff to do. I'm so excited to be here. So thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I think you might just be the youngest person ever to be on our podcast. So a momentous occasion. But I think, you know, for this fashion episode, the rise of sustainability in fashion specifically has really been like a huge part on the behalf of kind of like the Gen Zers, the younger people. And I'm so glad that this trend has been happening. So for a fashion episode, I think we should first start out with your fashion style. Do you think you can even categorize it into like one fashion style?
Well, I'm still kind of like trying to develop my style, but I generally opt for things that are simple and comfortable, but still cute. I don't super care about being like Pinterest level trendy, like that's above my pay grade. But as long as what I'm wearing makes me feel good and still playing into like the general dress code of whatever I'm doing, I'm good with it. I love cool sneakers and gold jewelry, but like I said, other than that, I'm kind of all over the place. What about you, really?
Well, I mean, I guess like everyone, it changes. I have to say, I really like your term of like Pinterest level trendy, because sometimes I like scroll through those boards and I'm just like, gosh, how many hours does it take to look this good? Or, you know, I'm just like, you know, instead of a pants and a shirt and trying to color coordinate and blah, 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 the easy way out is just a dress. So because I'm like a really huge plant nerd, I've been wearing like a lot of greens and florals, and spring is here and everything's like cute. And since dresses are just so easy, I've just been layering them with like a long sleeve shirt and leggings like constantly, because I am a constantly cold person. So I'm glad the spring is finally coming up too. Speaking of which, we even have some fashion accessories sometimes in our Feminist Book Club like monthly box subscription. Recently, I think our March box from just last month had a headband. And because it was, I think it was Caribbean focused month, it came from the small black owned business called Afro Accessories Afro Band, and it was super cute, really well made. If you want to check out the box and any other small businesses we support, I highly recommend going to our page. There's, you know, if you're listening to this, then you can obviously click any of the links that are within there. I think getting from small businesses has just become much more popular in general.
I totally agree. Like there's a lot more now about like supporting small businesses versus just going out to like the main, more mainstream stores. And it's really great because it means that you're seeing a lot less repetitive fashion because everyone's pieces are a lot more unique. You know, like you're not getting like that Urban Outfitters t-shirt with like the skateboarding like skeletons that everyone had like a couple years ago. Like you're seeing a lot more diversity in just the way that people are dressing. And because of that, people are becoming a lot more creative with it and trying not as hard, I think, to fit like the one basic standard.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing with like fashion and being able to express yourself that way is it's just so intrinsically tied to just kind of like visual presentation of yourself. Just in general, like for historically marginalized groups, being able to like own your own power, your own beauty, it cultivates this sense of like power, image making, and just like liberating yourself from like westernized beauty standards. So by having more and more of these like different types of looks, so to speak, you can kind of be yourself a little bit more. And now I feel like there's been this like kind of rise of people styling themselves in this different way. And you know, a lot of these specific fashions that are happening are kind of like, I don't know, just things being rebranded and coming back a second time.
Yep. I know that like chokers were in for a second. Y2K is having a big moment right now. It was a little bit more, I think, even last year, but like still a lot of that is playing into like fashion trends these days. And also a lot of 90s influences going on right now. Like I watch like Friends and like a bunch of like sitcoms or whatever, and just even see pictures like what was in the 90s, I would pretty much wear like all of those outfits today. And there's definitely some 70s influence in there too, which I think is kind of cool. Old stuff is definitely just coming back in general.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like a lot of it is also very centered around ideas of like, I don't know, like just very comfortable and chill things, you know, not necessarily like, you know, stilettos are example, you know, now there's like big chunky white dad sneakers and that's like the big thing. Do you think there's any like pressure on the downside though, like any pressure for people to have more outfits or like more clothes in general?
Oh yeah, definitely 100%. And with more and more trends continuing to pop up and then decline at like basically the same rate, it's so unrealistic to try to keep up. But like at the same time, I find myself wanting to buy every single new like it item. Like every couple months there's going to be like one like article of clothing that you see everywhere. I know like last fall of 2020, there were like these zebra pants, which were basically just like wide leg, high-waisted pants with like zebra print on them. And like they were everywhere, all over Pinterest, all over TikTok, all over the fashion accounts. And I like found them online and I like was like, oh, like these are cute. Like I'll buy these. Sure. Maybe I won't wear them, but you know, maybe I will if I have them. And I let them sit in my cart for like a couple weeks. And by the time I decided like, oh, like, I mean, they're going to order them now or I'm not, like I wasn't seeing them anymore. It was so fast. So like, even like, trends go so quickly, but I still find myself wanting to participate in them, even though it's unrealistic.
I feel like the trends are just so fast now, it's almost impossible to even keep up. And I wonder sometimes, like, the people who seem to be keeping up or the people who seem to be on trend of it, are they just, like, constantly buying new clothes?
Yes. Unfortunately, people are just getting new stuff all the time. Online shopping has at this point kind of morphed into like a game as opposed to like a convenient way to shop. Like items that became trendy kind of over quarantine, like tennis skirts. I know there was a lot of like leather jackets and pants and like cardigans. So many people, including myself, have some of those items just sitting in our dressers or our closets because there's never been any occasion to actually wear them out. And online shopping, it's like, it's addicting once you keep going with it. Like I've honestly heard some of my friends say that like tracking my package is like the only thing that makes me happy. But like, because of this, everyone just has so many clothes.
Yeah. And then, you know, you inevitably have like the YouTube video of like, oh, giant closet clean out. And like every one of those like giant closet clean out videos I see, there's always like at least two or three items where the person's like, oh, I bought this, I thought it'd be cute, and then I never wore it. And, you know, then people end up just like donating a bunch of clothes. I'm really glad that thrifting is huge, but I feel like that with the cycle of reduce, reuse, recycle, you know, reduce is the Beyonce of the Destiny Child of these three, you know, like the other two don't really matter. We really need to be focusing on more of the reduce, the reuse and recycle bits. You know, they're good. They're still, you know, there's a place for them too, but it's just not nearly as impactful as just reduce.
But like thrifting is just going back to that reduce, reuse, recycle. It's just a way of recycling. It's a lot more eco-conscious than just like throwing out old clothes and having them end up in landfill because clothes are not the best at decomposing. And then buying new clothes just adds to the pollution and even more reason for the horrible work environments that so many fast fashion factories have. It just helps them to keep sustaining. So buying secondhand and going to thrift stores is a lot of the time viewed as a great option to help with some of those problems that more mainstream fashion brands contribute to.
You know, like I was saying earlier, I think the stigma around thrifting has just super, super faded over the last couple of years. Like before there was this sense of like, oh, it's unclean or like only poor people do it. Like now it's almost like, oh, you went thrifting. That's so cool. Did you find anything cute? There's, you know, like onto online shopping's a game, but going thrifting is now also kind of like this game activity. And like, instead of saying like, oh, I got this at some name brand store, Lululemon, whatever, instead saying, oh, I got this thrifting. It's kind of like, oh, wow, look, this is such a cool hobby. Look at finding this cool thing. It's so, I want to say it's kind of like a little hipster, but it's also like very, I don't know. It feels very cottagecore at the same time, but I know you can get some really like wild. See, this is why I like thrifting, because you can just find such weird stuff. Yeah. The one downside being like, you can't find necessarily things in the size, but I think we'll get to that in a little second with our charity.
Yeah, it's very, for lack of a better phrase, it's very in vogue right now to go thrifting. But the fact that vintage stuff is coming back into style also adds, I feel like, to the appeal of thrift stores now. Like the other day, actually, I went with my mom to my grandparents' attic to find some like old clothes of hers to see if like I might want to wear them. And I came back with a lot of cute stuff that was hers in like the 80s and the 90s that I literally have already put into like my wardrobe rotation. Like people want things that are like kind of older and but like one of a kind. Like being able to say like I found this item thrifting, it feels like a prize. It feels like you worked for something and like it's like a reward for going thrifting. Being able to find something that's like cute and like wearable, like you just feel so good wearing it because it's one of a kind. If you're not getting your parents' old stuff like I am, and if you're not going thrifting, finding vintage things can sometimes be really expensive.
And I think for a lot of people who may not have parents that have clothes that are like in this specific style, I'm talking about like people who are first generation immigrants, or perhaps their parents weren't necessarily really affluent at that time, so a lot of clothes didn't make it or whatever. Like if you're not getting those, going thrifting is super expensive and like kind of like a position of like, oh, cool, like this person before me had this ability to have these cool clothes and they're like relevant stuff. And like, you know, my parents were from India, so like old clothes from India aren't exactly in vogue here as much as they often have, like they show up in like patterns and whatnot. And for people who just like aren't necessarily thrifting but want to be eco-friendly, like going back to things being expensive, like sustainable clothes are so, so expensive. Cough, cough, Reformation, cough, cough. Like these sustainable brands are like way pricier than like fast fashion counterparts. And as a really quick aside, I really hate that like in a lot of these like sustainable brands, you very rarely see Black models or like BIPOC representation. Like Reformation, nearly every single one of their models, and then there'll be like the one token like Black person, but then of course every other model is just like this tall, skinny, like white blonde chick. And I hate that I have to like almost pick between like, do I care about representation or do I care about the environment? Like it's like almost like pick which kind of, you know, social justice cause you care about. There's so few that like genuinely hit kind of like all the boxes, so to speak.
And personally, I've been struggling with that a lot recently too, like finding clothes that are sustainable, but also clothes that like I want to wear. A lot of these sustainable brands, or even if they're more mainstream brands, like I know H&M has like a quote unquote sustainable section of the website, and Princess Polly has like a sustainable line of clothing, but like those clothes are so plain and basic, and like they're not cute clothing, you know, like they're there, I think, so the brands can say that they're there, not because they're actually making clothes that like people want to wear to like be trendy and like keep up with it. And I've grown out of a lot of my clothes, and I just want to update my wardrobe a little bit in general. And it is really hard to shop when I know that if I don't want to spend a ton of money to maybe find those sustainable clothes that are a little bit cuter, then I am going to have to help fuel some of these awful practices that cheaper brands like do to make their clothes. And I'm kind of hesitant to go into some thrift stores too to get those clothes because it is the recycling. Because places like Goodwill and Salvation Army, I know, really take advantage of their workers, which I also just do not want to support. Instead of blaming individuals for thrifting, like we should blame corporate greed. Like one of the regional CEOs of Goodwill made a little less than $750,000 in 2018, and some of his workers with disabilities were being paid less than $1 an hour.
Gosh, that like that power gap, that money gap. Yeah, it's gross. I also want to make sure that there's like a difference between stores that are helping impoverished communities compared to thrift stores that are for profit. Like for profit stores are things like Savers, Buffalo Exchange, that kind of thing. And a lot of people blame this like rising of prices of in all of these kinds of stores to like the popularity of thrifting. But I think it's a little more this whole like gentrification of thrift stores, so to speak, is a little more complicated than that.
Could you go into that a little bit more? Like, what do you mean more complicated?
Well, I mean, I think the idea is like with more people buying at thrift stores, there's now increased prices and like less clothes. But the reality is that like most thrift stores actually have like a huge excess of clothing. So only like a fifth of all clothes donated to thrift stores actually get sold. The rest of it's just like thrown away or it's sold to other countries. And when it's sold to other countries, it puts like local textile workers out of jobs. And the ability we have now to like just transport things across the globe, it's like, A, it's really cool, but B, it's also like such a huge carbon cost. Like the fact that I can like order a thing made in China for $7 through Amazon and have it show up at my house in like, you know, a day, that's absolutely wild and does not actually reflect, you know, how much it's harming the people and the environment that's like, you know, producing it. So in this case, like the higher demand for all these like thrifting and stuff like that isn't actually what's leading to scarcity, but it's the demand also isn't like directly causing the higher prices.
It's so interesting to think about how much like when once the clothes are made, like they have to go somewhere. And if they're not going to thrift stores and they're going to other places, like once we make them, like they're there and like we can't just get rid of them. But if there isn't like the scarcity, if there are so many like clothes out there that are just sitting around, then why are really the prices going up?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's other factors like how expensive it is to make it, the operating costs, that kind of thing. There's just inflation in general, which has also been like, I think like 19% over the last 10 years. So to do the math on that, basically, if you had $10 in 2010, that $10 is like about $12 now. So there's quite a bit of like difference right there. I don't know. It might just be that the thrift stores are raising prices to just increase their revenue.
Do you think it would be a solution if people who actually can afford those sustainable and ethical clothing options to stop buying from thrift stores?
I don't know. I feel like this really goes back to what you're saying about like putting the effort, like making it so consumers have to solve the problem rather than like the company and the governments and like the companies who are like filling the oceans with toxic waste, et cetera. Like it really should be on the governments to regulate the companies and the companies to not be like, you know, so freaking terrible. And also like not everyone necessarily has the time to buy from thrift stores. So just because people are buying from thrift stores, like, I don't know, I go back and forth on this so much.
Because there's no really good option. Like, it's really hard to find that perfect middle ground. And it's more than just the consumers to make the ethical choices. Like, as consumers, we have to just think about where we're buying from and why we're buying from there. But like, the brands and manufacturers also have to step it up. It can't just be us trying to regulate where we're getting our clothes. The people who are making our clothes have to make it easy for us to pick them.
With all the clothes being like not necessarily of like the greatest quality, like they'll kind of degrade so quickly, but at the same time, there was all this cost that went into them in terms of like, even if they are not great material, creating the not great material, all the labor, and then more than anything else, like the transport of transporting it somewhere else. But I don't know, what about the people? I guess I'm always wondering about like the people who are taking like the high quality, really nice items from the different thrift stores, and like, there are people who do need that clothing.
I mean, we're going to touch on that at the end a little bit, but the rising popularity of thrifting among more wealthy consumers who are doing it as more of like a trend and for fun, as opposed to out of necessity, like they're thrifting as opposed to buying from sustainable and ethical brands. And that limits the already few options that are available to low income communities when it comes to clothing. And because of that, there's less quality items left on the thrift stores for those who actually don't have another affordable option for buying like professional attire that could mean the difference between impressing or crashing at a job interview, which is really important.
And it's not really like going into a store where you can see one item and then be like, oh, I'd like this one size above. You have to kind of like every item exists in and of itself. And that's like it. You're not necessarily going to find like a matching set or anything.
Yeah. And going back to what you just said about sizing, plus sizes are rare in thrift stores, just as they are in like brand name stores. And since the poor are disproportionately more obese than the rich, one has to be especially conscious about the effect of thrifting on bigger pieces, because those are already so rare.
I think one of the books that I really liked that Feminist Book Club had recently, it's called The Body is Not an Apology. It kind of goes into this concept of like just radical self-love in terms of figuring out like being comfortable with your own body and things like that. And I would really love to see that like more reflected in how clothes get produced, you know, like making sure that like plus size clothing doesn't necessarily need to cost like triple the size of a smaller size or something like that. I mean, apart from all of this though, there's also some people who kind of like thrift for sport or for like game.
What do you mean like for sport though?
I guess like, you know, people who are like hunting for like special pieces to resell on other platforms like Depop or Poshmark or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know a lot of people kind of exploit like their online popularity to make businesses out of reselling thrifted items at like marked up prices. I've seen people on Depop who do this like all the time. Like, they'll go to thrift stores and then they'll go, but to find items that they can upsell for 3-4 times the price to make a profit on it from the thrift stores.
See, I can't tell if it's like good to be optimistic about all these apps. Like, on one hand, it's really nice that people are more aware of the problems in fast fashion and consumerism. And on the other hand, like stores like ThredUp and Poshmark are also part of the whole like transportation carbon emission problem. And I mean, the reason I think I'm so like iffy about a lot of these is because it's so hard to track, right? You can't just like point at an item and be like, this is exactly the amount of carbon cost this had, because it goes through so many people. And by the time you get it, it's like, who knows how much that was made that was like costing the environment and costing humanity too.
Yeah. In terms of clothes, there's really nothing we can do at this day and age to make it like better for the environment. Every single piece of clothing that you buy, it's not turning out so great. But for those of you who don't know about ThredUp, it was founded in 2009. Oh my God, I was like three then, as a men's shirt swapping company. And now it's a consumer resale marketplace, which represents over like 35,000 brands. It's basically like an online thrift store.
I would think that maybe one solution is to like kind of just pick from brands that are a generally better, like, you know, brands that are planting trees and can track where their stuff is coming or whatever the heck. Like, do you have a solution?
I mean, there's obviously some brands that are much better and some brands that are much worse, but I don't really know if there's any perfect solution all around to buying clothes that won't contribute to like any of the problems that we mentioned. I would just say, if you are buying clothes, to do your best to make the choices that work for you while also doing the best that they can for our world.
Yeah. I like what you're saying. Yeah. Just being like more intentional about the things that you buy and like only getting items that you really like and that you're going to wear multiple times, not just like once and then throw it away. Yeah. So I think that's kind of all the time that we have. So I have a really couple quick few last questions for you. First, for this episode, I will be donating my earnings to a fashion or styling charity of your choice. So can you tell us a little bit about the charity that you have selected for us?
Yeah, of course. And thank you so much for doing that. I found this organization called Dress for Success, which helps women achieve economic independence by providing a network of support, professional attire, and the development tools to help women thrive and work in life. They'll help women prep for job interviews and then actually give them outfits to wear going in so they're ready for that. It's really an amazing organization that's just working to help empower women all over the world.
Gosh, I love how they've like really taken this concept of like, you know, dress for success and like implemented it exactly in the communities that need it. That's really awesome. And also bringing this podcast back to books for just a hot second, do you have any books that you would recommend for our listeners?
So I read this a while back, but it really stuck with me. One book that I really loved was called Educated by Tara Westover. She wrote it about her own amazing life and experience growing up kind of completely off the grid in Idaho in a large and very strictly Mormon family, and having to pretty much figure out everything on her own to get to college and to see the world and escape the bubble that she was raised in. It really gave me a completely new perspective and appreciation for education in general, and was really mind-blowing and inspiring to see what this woman was able to do for herself and her dreams coming from such a different situation and just childhood than I or really anyone I had ever known.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds super cool. I actually just put a hold on it in the library. So it sounds just really cool. and then I guess the only other book we mentioned on this podcast is The Body Is Not an Apology. There's a really awesome blog post about it on Feminist Book Club. The link is going to be in the show notes in the description for you guys. It's basically kind of just about self-love, and it's written by an activist and poet, Sonia Renee Taylor. And she kind of like invites everyone to reconnect with the mind-body relationship, to kind of celebrate the idea of just like being strong and being like alive. And instead of like being shamed for having a body or being shamed for having a body that doesn't look like other people. And I think trying to have this kind of like radical self-love is much easier said than done. I, for one, am definitely not the best at being kind to myself, but books like these kind of help you check in with yourself and remind yourself to be a little kinder. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Emma, and for giving us the perspective of a young feminist on this topic. So if our audience wants to hear a little bit more about you, where can they connect with you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. This was so much fun. You can reach me on Instagram. It's just Emma Wasserman with an underscore afterwards. I'm on LinkedIn, which is just search up Emma Wasserman. But thanks so much again. This was so much fun.
And last but not least, thank you to our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss or a question you have for me, my DMs are always open, and you can find me on pretty much any platform, YouTube, Insta, Twitter, TikTok, whatever, as Notes by Neva. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll see you on the next page.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.